In the following interview, we incorrectly stated and implied that Candace Owens' interviews on Joe Budden's podcast and The Breakfast Club happened after the Daily Wire announced her separation from the outlet on March 22nd. They both occurred before. The Budden interview was recorded during the week of February 27th and published in mid-March. The Breakfast Club discussion was recorded on March 18th and aired on March 21st. We regret the error. This is A Word, a podcast from Slate. I'm your host, Jason Johnson. Candace Owens built a lucrative career by converting to black conservatism and becoming one of the chief cheerleaders for Donald Trump. But after losing a rhetorical fight with right-wing media giant Ben Shapiro, Owens is now taking her act to black media, looking for redemption and maybe her next paycheck. Our guest today says, not so fast.
She's just a person who says stuff, and because she's black, she gets to say anti-black stuff. She's what white people talk about when they talk about the diversity hire.
Candace Owens, Black Media, and the Politics of Redemption, coming up on A Word with me, Jason Johnson. Stay with us.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Can you set the stage a little bit so people understand what happened?
In 1969, 14 black student athletes were kicked off their university's American football team for planning a show of support against racism.
We were really protesting our treatment on the field.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells their story.
We became brothers that day when you did that to us.
We made a change.
Fighting for what we deserve.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to A Word, a podcast about race and politics and everything else. I'm your host, Jason Johnson. Conservative commentator and professional provocateur Candace Owens emerged as one of the primary black voices supporting Donald Trump during his first term. A middling social media personality who once criticized him for racism, Owens became one of Trump's chief defenders and a leading black voice of anti-black rhetoric.
The Brits invading Africa actually represents, and this is going to get me in trouble, but it was, if you look at how forward it brought the African colonies, it ended up being a net positive.
Breonna Taylor was a victim of her own bad choices and circumstances, okay? She was a victim of her boyfriend and her boyfriend's bad choices and circumstances. This is what happens when you hang out with drug dealers, people that have guns on them, people that their instinct is to shoot first. This is what happens, okay? So spare me your white guilt. Do me a favor and spare me your white guilt. If you are a black person, spare me your Black Lives Matter mantra and think for a second. But why are we pretending that this criminal should be upheld as a citizen, as a martyr in Black America? A martyr for a fake narrative, by the way. Police brutality, racially motivated police brutality is a myth.
Talk like that led to scores of talking head appearances, gigs for Owens at Turning Point USA and The Daily Wire. But a recent falling out with Ben Shapiro has banished Owens into the conservative media wilderness. And the next thing you know, Owens started showing up in black media, on Joe Budden's podcast and on The Breakfast Club, claiming her record of baseless and inflammatory statements were all a big misunderstanding. In order to show this, she went out of her way to, at least in my view, pretend she really didn't understand black culture very well.
Finish this response. God is good.
God is good. Amen.
No, no, no. Jesus. No.
I thought you were going to say God is great. No. Thank you for the full
God
eight.
Is great.
No.
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 God, right,
you're not going to give an answer.
I'm going to do you, Charlamagne. Yeah. Charlamagne, God is good.
All the time.
And all the time.
God is good.
That's right.
Where's that from?
Our next guest is among those who believe black media needs to shut down the Candace Owens redemption tour right now. Michael Harriet is a veteran journalist and author, most recently of the book Black AF History, The Unwhitewashed Story of America. In a recent piece for The Guardian titled Hate Can't Be Reasoned With, So Why Is Black Radio Hosting Candace Owens?, Michael Harriott lays out how Black media and Black consumers need to be more responsible. Michael Harriott, welcome back to A Word.
Thank you for having me back.
First off, what compelled you to write this piece about the Candace Owens redemption tour? And what made you want to write it in The Guardian as opposed to in The Griot, where most of your work appears?
The reason I wanted to write it in The Guardian, and the reason I wrote it specifically, is because I didn't want to have a conversation about Candace Owens specifically. Because I think this conversation is really about Black media. You know, when I think of Black media, you know, we think of Charlemagne's platform, we think of Joe Budden's platform, and even if you widen it, you think of like Roland Martin has a show. But to me, the reason those people have those shows is they are built on Black culture and the culture that Black people built. So we are all kind of the owners of those shows. I wanted to talk about how people use the culture that we built to harm us. Like what Candace Owens says doesn't specifically harm us, but she is a tool that is used to harm Black people, specifically Black people. She is part of an anti-Black establishment whose goal is to wipe out Black people, to take jobs, to disempower us economically. So what is our responsibility in, I hate the word, but I'm going to use it, platforming people like that?
I like that this is where you're taking it, Michael, because that's been a thing, that's been the bee in my bonnet for a long time. When I look at what Owens was doing and who she represents, I love the fact that in your piece, you compare her to the white mob. And you talk about this idea that a lot of Black centers of education and Black newspapers and Black media outlets, we don't have access to those things today because the white mob burned them down, because the white mob destroyed them. Talk a little bit about how you compared Candace Owens' redemption tour to the white mobs of the past that have been out with the pure, consistent intent to destroy Black media and Black history.
So when I was researching my book, right, I wanted to include like contemporaneous Black voices, you know, so if I was writing about something that happened in 1851, I wanted to see what people were saying in 1851. And one of the ways you could do that is looking at Black newspapers, you know, what Black scholars were thinking. And so many times I'd run into the same two sentences, burned by a white mob, no surviving copies exist. You know, we don't talk about a lot about how many Black newspapers, how many Black, like if when you go on the HBCU campus, there's always an old building and there's always a plaque that says this building was built in 1910, but it replaces a building that burned in like 1876. White mobs did that almost always, right? And even like churches during Reconstruction, they were burned down by white mobs, but those are where we stored like records and stuff. And Black media is the keeper of our history. Like, you know, when we talk, well, not just Black media, all media, right? So when you look at white media, right? Like what you're looking at, and when you're looking at history, you're looking at what the New York Times said in 1852 or what the Washington Post said in 1910. Well, Black media has done the same thing, but it gives our perspective. And the reason that it exists is because without it, a lot of our stories wouldn't be told. Like the New York Times didn't cover the civil rights movement for the most part, right? Like people don't realize that. Like the Red Summer of 1919, newspapers didn't cover that. The reason we know about the lynching epidemic was because of Ida B. Wells. And so Black media is important in not just giving the world our perspective now, but preserving it. So when Candace Owens walks into those spaces, she is doing the work of the white mob because she is using her words and the white mob's position. Not because Candace Owens don't come on The Breakfast Club thinking that she's going to convince Black people to come to her side, right? So let's get that out of the way for the first part, right? Like, she doesn't think, like, I'm going to turn all these Black people Republicans in 37 minutes, right? She doesn't think that. But what she's doing is coming on there, saying a kinder, gentler version of what she says in front of white people. And then she goes back to the white people and say, I told y'all they couldn't lay a hand on me. She legitimizes herself, her position, her specifically anti-black positions, and the right-wing rhetoric. Because she's been in the lion's den. She's been in there with the king of black media, the Charlemagne, the god of black media, and he didn't do anything to her. So she must be right.
Here's what's interesting. A couple podcasts ago, we had on Clay Kane, you know, radio host, SiriusXM. He wrote this book, Grifters, great book, New York Times bestseller, a whole bit. And we talked about the sort of history of black Republicans and black conservatism, you know, in the modern age. We're not talking about, you know, 1967, you know, that sort of thing. And what I'm curious about, Michael, is how does Owens' redemption tour differ from what we've seen in the past? Because, you know, there have been black conservatives who, you know, finally the white folks that they work for kick them out or get tired of them. But I don't think we've ever seen somebody who was so blatantly anti-black, like somebody who, you know, who denigrated George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, then turn right around the moment they get fired and say, let me nuzzle in the bosom of blackness. How was Owens, in your perspective, tour different from what black conservatives in the past have done when their white benefactors get tired of them?
Well, first of all, let's explain this. Candace Owens is not a conservative. She's just a mouthpiece for anti-black people, right? Right? She doesn't spout conservative principles. She doesn't spout fiscal or political or social conservatism. She just says stuff that's anti-black, and she can say it because she's black. So that's part of it, right? And so, in essence, like, so Candace Owens said, she kind of was one of the people who's hopped on that anti-DEI black bandwagon. She said she'd be, quote, terrified if she got on a plane and she saw a woman pilot or a black pilot, because she'd think it was DEI. But Candace Owens is where she is because she's black. That's the only qualification. She doesn't have a she doesn't have a college degree. She's never studied politics. She's just a person who says some stuff. And because she's black, she gets to say anti-black stuff. She's what white people talk about when they talk about the diversity hire. Candace Owens is white people's diversity hire. So when she goes on those platforms, she's only being welcomed to these black platforms, it's because she's black, right? So she's not saying anything new or interesting. The conversations are not new or interesting. It's just for clickbait. And I wish that black media wouldn't do it, because her ultimate goal, or the goal of the people who use Candace Owens, is against everything that black people have worked for.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more on Candace Owens' redemption tour on black media. This is A Word with Jason Johnson. Stay tuned. This is Jason Johnson, host of A Word, Slate's podcast about race and politics and everything else. I want to take a moment to welcome our new listeners. If you've discovered A Word and like what you hear, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And let us know what you think by writing us at aword@slate.com. Thank you. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and Black as the country they reflect. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to A Word with Jason Johnson. Today, we're talking about Candace Owens' Black Media Tour with writer Michael Harriott. Michael, I want to read you a quote from your piece that I absolutely love because I think it gets to the kind of the core of what's going on here. You talk about the idea that Owens and people of her ilk, Owens, Nikki Haley, they get on these shows, they get on these black platforms, and you say, quote, "I know some of these hosts personally and don't believe there is ill intent, but they are wrong. Most of the time, the conversations that they're having are not even interesting. They only serve the people who benefit from upholding white supremacy. The people who fund Nikki Haley's anti-black agenda undoubtedly saw her Breakfast Club appearance as redemption for her racist historical revisionism. These guests have never had a single thought that hasn't already been uttered by someone with whiter skin and a brighter tiki torch." We talked about this right before the break, and I think you say something key here that I want to get your thoughts on. A lot of the anger in the public is with the fact that these hosts are platforming these people, that Joe Budden is platforming Candace Owens, that Charlamagne the God does bring on Nikki Haley or Umar Johnson and doesn't challenge these people. Where does the responsibility with us as consumers to tell them, hey, this ain't good, begin? And where does the responsibility of people like Charlamagne or Joe Budden or Stephen A. Smith or anybody else to say, you know what? I have this big platform. I shouldn't be giving these people space.
Well, I think we've heard with all of those people, black people speak out directly to those hosts when they bring these people on. I think if you're building these kinds of platform or have one of these kinds of platforms, your responsibility is, first of all, you know, a lot of these people, like, you know, well, it's like, I don't even count Stephen A. Smith, because Stephen A. Smith is a Republican. Like, let's get that out of the way. Like, he's just a Republican, right? Like, you know, he kind of pretends to be objective, but we know what Stephen A. Smith is. I ain't no hating that. Like, he is the person that, like, a real conservative person. Like, you know, he's an actual conservative. There's no problem with that. Like, political idea. We all know a conservative uncle. But I think what though the responsibility that those people have is, I think there's just one. Don't hurt us. Right? Like, the reason you exist is because if we turn on CBS, if we turn on Fox News, if we turn on everybody else, they're giving white people's perspective. And they're giving the perspective that harms black people. Under the guise of objectivity. So even if you're trying to be objective, we don't need no objectivity when we listen to you. We're listening to you because you serve a certain need, right? You have a responsibility, not just to your audience, right? But to black people, to the people who built the culture that gave you this platform, right? If it wasn't for hip hop, if it wasn't for black people, black radio, all the black people that came before them, like, nobody would be invested in, iHeartMedia wouldn't care about these black platforms, and Joe Budden wouldn't have a podcast that, you know, gets millions of dollars from investors, right? Black people built that too. And you can't let somebody perch in a window in a house that black people built and take shots at us. Just don't hurt us. These people want to hurt us. These people want to shoot at black people metaphorically. And we should not offer them a window.
Here's where it gets interesting, Michael. And this is like I said, why you're one of the people I want to talk to about this. So I get what you're saying. I agree with you, right? We should say to these people, and we don't have, if we talk about the entire landscape of black media that has even access to anything remotely political, we're talking about, you know, maybe 5 to 7 podcasts that aren't, you know, exclusively about music or exclusively about entertainment. We only have a couple of websites. We have, you know, not that many newspapers that have access. The criticism that I often hear is that because of the power that a Joe Budden or a Charlemagne the God have now, that other people in black media are afraid to publicly criticize them. That other people are saying, hey, you know, I could say, hey, Charlemagne, that was really irresponsible, but then he won't invite me on his show. Or I could say this about Joe Budden, but I don't want to get into a fight with him. I don't want to be the next Amanda Seales. I want to ask you, one, do you think that's a valid criticism? And two, you know, why did you feel empowered to make this sort of criticism when I think a lot of other people want to be quiet about it?
That's a valid thought. I don't know if it's a valid criticism because I don't think Charlemagne is that thin-skinned. So I've had this conversation with him on his show. I don't think Charlemagne the God is dumb enough to think that he was not going to get any criticism when he brought Candace Owens on his show. You can't build a media empire and be that adept in media and then think that you weren't going to get anything. The interesting thing about this is nobody would be criticizing Charlemagne the God's show if they didn't feel that that show was very important. I think people felt the appearance on Charlemagne the God more intensely because, like, you know, this is a platform that they trust and they built and has been an advocate for black people in many ways. I'm not like besties with Charlemagne the God, but I feel comfortable in saying like I know his intent ain't to harm black people. I think you can criticize the things that people do without criticizing them. Right? So I'm criticizing the decision that the Breakfast Club had to put Candace Owens on a black platform that black people built. This ain't even about Charlemagne the God. Right? You know, so you can criticize a person with a person's actions or the result of their actions without criticizing the persons. It's, you know, there's this thing in media that journalists know is that you can't say a person is racist. You can say this person did a racist thing. And what I'm saying is not that these people are anti-black or these people are dumb, but they did an anti-black thing. They did a dumb thing by platforming these people who are anti-black. And I think there's a difference, a nuance in that.
You know, you mentioned something, you know, you've been a journalist for years. You're a best-selling author. You know, we've had you on the podcast before to talk about Black AF history. I've had my students read it at Morgan. They really, really like it. You mentioned something really interesting, not just about Charlemagne, but kind of in talking about journalism. And what's your sort of thoughts on this? I think because of the lowering of doors and social media and the fact that anybody can put together a podcast, first off, doesn't mean your podcast is going to be tops across the country, but anybody can sort of get involved in political journalism discussion now, I do think we can reach this place where people do get involved and want to dip into politics, but don't really have any insight into it, right? Candace Owens becomes famous, even though, like you said, she ain't got no education, she has no career, she has no background in it, but is platformed by white people in order to be this big, important person. I've had experiences with Killer Mike. I've had experiences with other sort of black entertainers who decide they want to get into politics. I don't know Charlemagne myself, but I know some of the things that he has said in response to people who have criticized him. When you talk about this idea as to whether or not people are thin-skinned, what do you think of this, the fact that we're at this point now where people who aren't trained journalists are obviously, and in many ways, the most powerful influencers when it comes to political thought, right? I mean, yes, the reason people criticize Charlemagne is because his show is influential. If it wasn't influential, nobody would care, right? There's 1,000 podcasts out there talking about politics nobody cares about. But his criticism comes from the fact that, like, hey, dude, you do have presidential candidates coming on, and don't you have an obligation to do this? Killer Mike, you say this. This other person says that. Where are we in that sort of place in politics? Because it seems like a lot of people are influencing the discussion who don't really have the qualifications for it. And that's not that different from Candace Owens.
So I reject that notion, that premise. I reject the premise that black people are listening to Charlemagne the God and deciding on who to vote for. I think he influences the conversation like everybody influenced the conversation. And if you have a big platform, you have more people who listen to your perspective. But it doesn't mean that what you say or what they hear on your platform influences their decision. Candace Owens sounds stupid on Charlamagne Tha God, right? Like, again, I have no worries that Candace Owens or Nikki Haley are going on Charlamagne Tha God or Joe Budden show and changing people's mind or changing people's political opinion. That's not the argument, right? So let's reject that, because first of all, that belief comes with the insinuation that Black people are very shallow and malleable, and that they don't have a political belief until they hear it from Charlamagne Tha God, right? Like, that's just not true. But when we have these conversations, first of all, let's be honest. So Black people, for the most part, like, this is an interesting thing to think about. Like, we ain't did this but 20 times. Like, when you talk about elections, right? You think about presidential elections. Like, we just got the right to vote in 65, right? Like, nationwide, like, kind of like everybody just had the chance to go to the ballot box. So there's a limited number of times that we have done this. We don't have enough of a sample size to know exactly what the Black political spectrum involves. When people dabble, everybody has a political opinion, and I think it's okay to say your political position into a mic. But once your audience gets a certain size, you have a responsibility, I think, to understand what you're doing and what the outsized voice or influence that you have. Now, here's where it gets complicated. And I even talk about this on Charlamagne's, when I was on The Breakfast Club. Like, ego complicates it, because you think you're smart enough to, I can swat down Nikki Haley when she says something it's crazy. I can swat down Candace Owens because you hear her on her podcast, and then you pause, and then you have a second to think about it and read or and have a differing opinion. But in real time, it's really tough. And what, and I'm not saying, like, you know, only journalists should do it, but what I'm talking about is journalists and scholars, they've read and taught those facts so many times, they have them at the tip of your tongue, right? I could tell you there's never been, like, when people say, well, Black people used to vote Republican, now, like, Black people, a majority of Black people have never actually voted Republican since 1936, when they started, you know, disambiguating the results by race. Like, I have like police statistics at hand, and I have political statistics at hand because I write about and talk about and research this stuff as my job. Like, I'm not dabbling in it, right? And Nikki Haley ain't dabbling in it, right? So when Nikki Haley goes against somebody that's just dabbling in it, right, it looks like Nikki Haley is right, because she got him. She came out there. The dude who dabbles in it, man, he ain't lay a hand on her. Like, he ain't, like, there's an interesting part, an interesting couple of seconds in Nikki Haley's appearance on The Breakfast Club where, you know, I forget what he asked her. And he, like, something like, you don't believe that America is a racist country or something like that. And then very subtly, she says, but some of it's culture. And nobody ever challenged that. When you dabble versus teach, study, have experience, then it looks like Nikki Haley knows what she's talking about, because she said the culture thing and nobody challenged her.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more about Candace Owens and Black media with writer Michael Harriet. This is A Word with Jason Johnson. Stay tuned.
Can you set the stage a little bit so people understand what happened?
In 1969, 14 Black student athletes were kicked off their university's American football team for planning a show of support against racism.
We were really protesting our treatment on the field.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells their story.
We became brothers that day when you did that to us.
We made a change.
Fighting for what we deserve.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I've got a special message for our listeners in Canada. It's about a show that I think you should listen to, Canada Land. Every week, Canada Land's journalists bring you news and conversations that honestly can be hard to find these days. With rigorous reporting and thoughtful analysis, their episodes bring you into the most important conversations from across the country. From a radical form of reconciliation emerging in Saskatchewan to in-depth debates and gun rights and the rise of fascism, Canada Land stories will surprise you and make you think. Try Canada Land today and find out why Canadian news doesn't have to sound like Canadian news. Search Canada Land in your podcast app. You're listening to A Word with Jason Johnson. Today, we're talking about Candace Owens' redemption tour on Black Media with author and columnist Michael Harriet. I want to follow up on what we were just talking about. So one, I don't think Killer Mike, I don't think Charlamagne Tha God, I don't think most of these people are vote changers, right? So I want to make that clear. I don't think there's anybody who turns it. I don't think Cardi B, right? And I'm a political scientist that's, you know, studied celebrity endorsements. I don't think there's one person in the world who didn't know who they were going to vote for and decided because Cardi B said something or Charlamagne Tha God said something. But what I do think people in positions of influence can do is they can reinforce where somebody happens to be. So for example, if I'm already someone who's like, I kind of think politics is BS, right? And then, you know, Charlamagne Tha God platforms somebody and says, yeah, well, you know what? What I heard is that, you know, Trump gave more to HBCUs than Biden, or I don't see any difference between. It can reinforce people's who are already of the mindset that, hey, this stuff doesn't matter, right? That's what I think is much more likely than anyone's opinion being changed. But there's another element to this with a colleague of ours, you know, Roland Martin or Roland Martin Unfiltered. Roland Martin is sort of from that perspective that, hey, we shouldn't be platforming anybody who could potentially do this harm. And I want to play this clip of what he talked about when it comes to Candace Owens on Roland Martin Unfiltered.
I have no desire to talk to Candace Owens. There will not be an invite extended to Candace Owens. Because Candace, you said all you need to say about Black people. We heard you loud and clear. You can now try to blame the media. You can now try to say, well, my words were twisted. But the reality is you said it. It came out of your mouth.
But here's the thing. I think this idea that you've put out there about dabbling is key to this. Because, yeah, you've studied this stuff. You know, Roland Martin has had, you know, Richard Spencer. He's had white nationalists on. I know how to do this. You know how to do this. I think the issue is that it's not just that you have people who are only dabblers in politics allowing themselves to be steamrolled by white nationalists, but they are either too arrogant or too naive to recognize that that's what happened to them. Because I would argue that the same format that allowed Candace Owens to try to launder her reputation on The Breakfast Club the following week had on Ole Ulumuri, who we've also had on this show, and Eric Adams, and she ethered them. And that was some of the best media journalism I've seen all year. So the question is, what do we do about the dabblers? It's people who care about Black media, because they can provide both great formats and the laundering of terrible people.
Let me be clear, right? Like, I think Roland Martin could handle some of these people, but I don't think he should have them on. Like, I don't think they should be in our spaces. We should not give our time to them. They are trying to kill us. They mean nothing good for Black people. They should not be welcome in our houses. The idea of, like, what do we do about the dabblers? I think we're doing it, right? Like Charlamagne had Candace Owens on, and Joe Budden had Candace Owens on, and all of these people, like even, you know, you talk about Stephen A. Smith and some of these people. Black people say what we want to say. Like, we talk back to them. They know, right? Like, they know how we feel. And I think that's what we do. That's what we can do, right? Because I don't know if we'll ever reach a point where there won't be Candace Owenses. I think we have to reach a point where all of the Candace Owens never get a foothold in Black culture. Like, we can take Candace Owens' job. Because if she doesn't give insight to us, and like people think, well, she got fired because of the anti-Semitic thing, and that probably plays a part into it. But I really think, right, when Candace Owens exposed herself as, oh, to black people as, and even the white people get like, oh, she ain't really, like, she ain't even one of them. Why are we listening to her? Then she lost her usefulness to the white people. And that's what we can do. Like, what we've been doing is what we can do, right? And even when it comes to people like Nikki Haley, right? Like, give her no foothold. Like, no place to land. Because, again, what Nikki Haley's goal was not to convince black people to vote for her. But Nikki Haley was building a platform for herself where all of these mainstream Republicans, when Trump leaves the battlefield, they're going to be looking for the next Republican Jesus. And Nikki Haley has put her stake in the ground, and she'll be able to say in part, see, I even went to the black people stuff and I came out unscathed. I mean, who else has done that? Right? DeSantis can't do it, right? All of the others couldn't do it. Like, that black platform gave Nikki Haley a toehold to continue her anti-blackness at a date to be later named.
Here's what's interesting, Michael, because in my view, I agree with you on this. You know, I'm big on, I don't want to platform terrible people, and I'm not going to platform who I think are bad faith actors. But how do we draw the line? Those of us who produce media, right, in your perspective, how do we draw the line between people where I don't want to platform this bad faith actor that wants us dead, but there are still some people who are elected officials who make policy, and holding them accountable publicly sometimes makes sense. I mean, Tim Scott, right, is aligned with the MAGA movement. I can see a logical reason to have on Tim Scott, but I can't see a reason to have on Candace Owens or those right-wing black comedy brothers they have, or some of these other crazy people. I can see a reason to have on the black Republican gubernatorial candidate in North Carolina because he has said crazy things, and that man may affect policy, even though he's crazy MAGA. But I wouldn't necessarily want a powerful influencer. So in your perspective, how do you draw that line? Who's a terrible person that we should shine the light on, right? Because my line is elected officials. Versus who's the terrible person that's like, we want to snuff you out and we're not going to give you our spaces to spread your lies and spread your nonsense.
I don't know if you've said a name yet that I would be interested in hearing from because they have something unique to say. Like, Tim Scott is just going to say what the regular white Republicans say. And the same thing, Mike Burke, the guy from North Carolina, the gubernatorial candidate, he, like, again, these people don't say stuff that white people aren't saying. Like, you can turn off Charlamagne Tha God and turn on Newsmax and hear Tim Scott say that stuff, right? You can hear, you know, white people say that stuff all of the time. The only thing you gain is maybe the clicks, but you could play clips of that guy or from Tim Scott and comment on those and make the same points. Like, their policies are worthless, their politics are worthless. But if you, and like, again, it's my choice, and it's the people who own these platforms' choice. I think if you do have them on, though, you have to remove ego from the equation and say, like Charlamagne did with Eric Adams, right? Like, if he would have done what he did with Eric Adams with, like, with Nikki Haley or some of these other people, like, it would have been an interesting conversation, right? Like, remove ego from the equation and have someone equipped to challenge these people. Because, like, if you, for instance, right, if you let someone who you know is a skilled thief in your mama's house, you're responsible for what they steal. Like, you know this person was a thief when you brought him in here. Like, why are you going to bring him in our house, right? Unless you got somebody who know what thieves do and can say, look, man, I know how you steal. I'm gonna be watching you. Like, we gotta have somebody who know what the thieves do when we let them in our house.
I do want to ask you this, Michael, because again, I have a lot of professional respect for you, not just as a writer, not just as a journalist, but also I think you're pretty insightful, and I can objectively say, like, you know, even we don't agree, I've always thought that your reasoning is really well-founded. I'm like, okay, you know what? I'll have to rock with that, but I understand why he thinks that way. we are facing, and you sort of said this with Charlamagne, hey, he's important in this podcast, that podcast is important. We're facing a real crisis point when it comes to Black media. Part of why we're even having this conversation is because we don't have as many outlets that are producing news. I'd love to just hear your thoughts on what you think the future of Black news is looking like. What can we expect to be, you know, the ways that we're getting our information over the next 3 to 5 years? Because it looks like a lot of our Black institutional news, it's changing, and its influence is sort of waxing and waning. What do you think the future looks like?
I think it's bright. I think what you're seeing with media in general is this fragmenting and it being democratized. Like, when you get a story now, it's not because you went to the Washington Post and looked at the front page and found the stories that you're interested in on the New York Times or anything like that. It's because you found the story, and then the platform, as long as you trust it, was kind of immaterial, right? It might have been the Washington Post, might have been New York Times, might have been, you know, the Baltimore Sun, right? But Black media is in that ecosphere. What's happening in media in general is that all media is gonna have to do what Black media did and has been adept at doing, and finding a way to monetize and find an audience. And so, like, everybody else basically is coming to where Black media has always been good at doing. Like, we might struggle and strive to survive, but we are skilled at it. And now all of these other platforms are going to have to figure it out. So I think, like, we're uniquely positioned to, because first of all, we have an audience. We know who it is. We know what they want. We know how to, what kind of content to produce to get to that audience, and everybody else just flailing. And so I think we're going to see Black media be the leaders. And I think what's the scary part about that is they're going to try to, like, regular media is going to try to poach some of these people, some of these leaders, and integrate them into white media. But I don't know if there's any profit in that anymore, because everybody owns their own content now. There's no reason to take a paycheck from, you know, this so-and-so platform if you can build it on your own. And so I think now, like, Black media is the thing that everybody has to fear.
Michael Harriott is a columnist for The Griot and the author of Black AF History, The Unwhitewashed Story of America. Man, I really, really appreciate this. Thank you so much, man, for coming on. And, you know, you are welcome on The Word at any time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me again. Thank you for having me.
And that's A Word for this week. The show's email is aword@slate.com. This episode was produced by Christy Taiwo Macanjula. Ben Richmond is Slate's Senior Director of Podcast Operations. Alicia Montgomery is the Vice President of Slate Audio. Our theme music was produced by Don Will. I'm Jason Johnson. Tune in next week for A Word.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's Jurisprudence Editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus Show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.